This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
They got it all ass backwards. If they really wanted to stop recreational use of marijuana, they would have banned vaping.
Attorney John Morgan files his lawsuit over a smoking ban in Florida's medical marijuana law.
And I think it's crazy what the legislature's done to give me this platform, because I'm right, and 71% of the people of Florida know I'm right.
President Donald Trump gets a bipartisan dose of ridicule over his proposal to partner with Russia to combat election interference.
It's not the dumbest idea I've ever heard, but it's pretty close.
I am sure that Vladimir Putin could be of enormous assistance in that effort, since he's doing the hacking.
But Trump's controversial election commission is getting some support from experts.
I think it is an analysis that needs to be done. It's needed to be done for a long time.
We have all that and more coming up on episode 113 of The Rotunda.
Let's get ready to rumble!
That is pretty much how power attorney John Morgan announced his visit to Tallahassee via Twitter.
People who are going to use this recreationally are going to vape, right? You said yes. So I can always spot the vapors in the crowd.
The ever charismatic attorney John Morgan made a stop in Tallahassee, right in front of the Leon County Courthouse, to announce the filing of his lawsuit against the state for its move to ban the smoking of medical marijuana.
The irony of it all is they got it all ass backwards. If they really wanted to stop recreational use of marijuana, they would have banned vaping, because that is the back door to recreational marijuana.
Morgan's "No Smoke is a Joke" hashtag came after lawmakers eventually passed a law to implement the use of medical marijuana in the state. But there was a last-minute catch inserted into the bill. Here's Republican Senator Rob Bradley.
Medicine should make you better. Smoking is inherently an unhealthy act, based on the evidence that we know today. And so I'm comfortable that that's not a mode of delivery for medical marijuana.
So that was the rationale for the last-minute restriction crafted by Republican Representative Ray Rodriguez.
Because they don't know the difference between marijuana and LSD and heroin, that they thought that this was their way of stopping people from backdooring the recreational use of marijuana. But all they did in the process was to hurt the patients who need it the most.
According to Senator Bradley, there are safer ways to consume medical marijuana.
You could have it by pill, drop, cream, vaping, and edibles. So as long as the edibles are presented in a manner that isn't attractive to children and it's done in a professional way.
Do we give a rat's ass if a person dying from ALS smokes instead of vapes? I don't. And I trust the doctors to figure out what's best for that client, for best for that patient, not Ray Rodriguez, who I looked up on the way. He's like a bean counter for a junior college or something. And all of a sudden, Ray Rodriguez is the doctor for the state of Florida? No.
Morgan's personality was on full display as he passionately criticized lawmakers for justifying banning smoking. Morgan says the legislature's efforts to limit the will of the people is a waste of taxpayer dollars.
By doing this, instead of let sleeping dogs lie, instead of me being here in Tallahassee fighting this, is they have opened the door fully to recreational use in Florida. And I think it'll happen in the next 3 to 4 years.
The rumble that has now rolled into the courts has been bankrolled by Morgan. Voters overwhelmingly passed Amendment 2 calling for medical marijuana, but Republican leadership drugged their feet on the issue and deadlocked during the regular session. Representative Ray Rodriguez.
If I were a voter, I would be very disappointed. I think they had a legitimate expectation that we would pass an implementing bill.
But lawmakers came back to Tallahassee to finish the job, and Rodriguez ended up using the time to help eliminate smoking altogether.
If Ray Rodriguez cares about smoking and protecting the citizens of Florida, you need to tax the hell out of cigarettes. But he doesn't care, and he won't. It is, excuse the pun, a smokescreen.
All right, so the question for John Morgan, what will he do with this platform? Will he use it to run for governor?
And I think it's crazy what the legislature's done to give me this platform, because I'm right, and 71% of the people of Florida know I'm right. So, you know, I'm gonna take this wherever it leads me.
We will have to see. This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to visit rotundapodcast.com. That's our website where you can stream this program at any time if you're not tech savvy with smartphones, to subscribe on iTunes or any other podcast app. Follow us on social media at Rotunda Podcast. We've been going strong since 2015, the first and only podcast focused on Florida politics and the state's influential leaders. There's hardly an episode produced today where I'm not sending you back into the archives for background. Senator Rob Bradley, for instance, his stance on medical marijuana is featured on episode 109. And coming up, Florida Secretary of State Ken Detzner is featured on episode 30, where he talks extensively about the integrity of Florida's voting systems. This program is supported by listeners like you. Visit rotundapodcast.com and show your support by clicking the top right-hand corner where it says donate. There are reports around the country that worried voters are trying to unregister after President Trump's Voter Fraud Commission requested extensive voter data, including partial social security numbers, party affiliation, voting history, criminal records, and more. You'll soon hear from an elections expert that says he welcomes the commission's probe. But first, let's look at another layer of this issue. Trump is facing another wave of scrutiny for his plan to partner with Russia to prevent future attacks on U.S. elections. By the way, U.S. intelligence have concluded Russia did interfere with the U.S. election. However, Trump wants the country to move on already. Here is Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff during a CNN interview.
I don't think we can move on. I don't think we can expect the Russians to be any kind of a credible partner in some cybersecurity unit. I think that would be dangerously naive for this country. If that's our best election defense, we might as well just mail our ballot boxes to Moscow. I don't think that's an answer at all.
Here's Senator Lindsey Graham on Meet the Press.
It's not the dumbest idea I've ever heard, but it's pretty close.
Graham, a Republican, even took to talking directly to Trump through his interview. As it's widely known, Trump is a huge consumer of television news.
2 hours and 15 minutes of meetings. Tillerson and Trump are ready to forgive and forget when it comes to cyber attacks on the American election of 2016. Nobody's saying, Mr. President, the Russians changed the outcome. You won fair and square, but they did try to attack our election system. They were successful in many ways. And the more you do this, the more people are suspicious about you and Russia.
And here's Republican Senator John McCain on Face the Nation.
I am sure that Vladimir Putin could be of enormous assistance in that effort since he's doing the hacking.
And then there's a tweet from Senator Marco Rubio who said, partnering with Putin on a cybersecurity unit is akin to partnering with Assad on a chemical weapons unit. Before the realities of interference in the 2016 election, I sat down with Florida's Secretary of State Ken Detzner. You can listen to that interview in its entirety on episode 30, taped in September of 2015.
And I like to tell people that I want to make sure that Florida shows as an example to the rest of the country in 2016 that we know how to run elections here in Florida.
The Brennan Center for Justice released a report. I don't know if you were able to see it, where they showcase that, like, nearly half, or I don't know exactly the numbers, are really outdated machines or 10 years old, like, mm-hmm. Old machines. And you've recommended that we need to have those upgraded. So are we ready for to avoid something disastrous. Like,
you know, I did see the Brennan report, and we were well ahead of anything that the Brennan report showed. And supervisors recognized that some of the equipment they had needed to be upgraded. And starting last year, I saw many counties going to their county commissioners. Their responsibility to get the funding from their county commission. But I saw many, many counties funding new equipment. In fact, just last week, I was over in Franklin County and met with 12 rural supervisors of elections from generally the North Florida area, a little bit of South Florida, and help them to secure Help America Vote funding for new equipment. So that was a group of 12 in itself. So we're well on the way to modernizing the equipment here in Florida. You're always trying to improve either the hardware or the software, but I think we've come a long way in response to that Brennan report. I'm confident that we'll be there and we'll be able to meet the demands of the public when it comes to voting equipment and accessibility.
What about voter integrity and making sure the our votes are secure and not subject to hacking? And as we modernize to different ways, there are different issues to deal with as we progress.
That is a very good question. Security is always on my mind when it comes to voting. As you may know, our office actually does the testing for voting equipment. And any equipment that's sold in the state of Florida, appropriated by the county commissioners for the supervisors, has to be certified by the department here. I have a whole bureau that does nothing but certify equipment, and we are considered national experts in the area of certifications. In fact, some states, if Florida certifies equipment, they will use the equipment that we certify. So we're well ahead of the game when it comes to that, and it's really the baseline for voting. You've got to have equipment that's secure and that assures that each individual vote counts, and we do that, and I'm proud of it.
So many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is very, very common.
As you know, President Trump has long claimed voter fraud was a problem in the 2016 election. He's made these claims without evidence. Facts show that outright fraud is rare and doesn't come anywhere close to rigging an election. But armed with his beliefs, Trump formed the Presidential Advisory Committee for Voter Integrity. The commission called on all states to turn over personal voter data, those that are publicly available. Florida's Secretary of State partially complied, saying most of the information is public record, but driver's license and Social Security numbers are not. To help make sense of all of this, I've invited a friend, an expert, Paul Kraft, who's been on a mission to get journalists to understand the facts surrounding this issue.
Tell us about yourself. You're sort of our go-to expert on elections around the country. Is that correct?
That's correct. Following election 2000, I became the chief of the Bureau of Voting System in Florida Department of State and had the privilege of helping Florida through election reforms. In about 2005, much of that work was done, and there were a lot of states and local governments around the country who were seeking help with election reform. So I started a company called Freeman Kraft McGregor Group, and we have been running that since 2005. We are a consulting company that helps state and local governments across the country with election technology and election administration procedures.
So election is a hot topic. It's always been a hot topic, as you know, in Florida. But now it's back in the spotlight after the 2016 election and this new commission that was formed in the Trump administration. And they're now on this fact-finding mission to see whether there was fraud in the system. Some 3 million fraud, or the numbers been quoted all over the place by President Trump. What do you make of this probe and this collection of data across the country?
Well, I think it is an analysis that needs to be done. It's needed to be done for a long time. There are, I think, instances of people who vote in more than one state, in more than one jurisdiction. I think those instances are individual acts by individuals who feel very strongly and feel the ends justify the means. From what I've seen over the years, I think those individual acts are pretty well randomly distributed through the population, and I don't think there's that many of them. So I really think while there is some voter fraud out there, I really doubt that it makes a difference in any election.
This request by the commission has received bipartisan criticism and flat-out rejection by some states. Do you see this as an overreach by the federal government?
I don't, within the context of the request as I understand it. They've asked for information that is publicly available. Frankly, rather than sending a letter to the agency heads, they could have simply submitted their request to the public records clerks in each of the agencies. So regardless of their motives, they are people who want to look at the data, who want to study it. And I think, you know, academic groups across the country do that from time to time. Citizens do it. You know, basically, they're trying to do an analysis.
This got a lot of people up in arm, this bipartisan criticism, because of Social Security numbers and, like, you know, driver's license information. Mm-hmm. I think I saw that the White House and the administration sort of backed down from an initial request to just say what's publicly available. Are we beyond that to be like, okay, this is okay?
I think we should be. I think there are a lot of people who feel that this information should not be public. And I'm among one of those who feels it shouldn't be public. Frankly, knowing that it's public basically could keep some people from registering to vote. And that was my original objection to it. That said, the Florida legislature and other state legislatures chose differently. They chose to make it public. I think a lot of the outrage is from people who, up till now, weren't really aware that it was public.
So you were objecting to what's already public you felt shouldn't be public. And right. You were fighting against this, like, you know, way back. Not really fighting, but you
I
were opposed to.
About it. I was a state employee and not a lobbyist, so let's not say that I was fighting it. But my opinion, personally, was that it should have never been made public. Mm-hmm. It was restricted public and limited to political parties and political campaigns and serious analysis of data prior to, I think, January 1, 2006. And basically, in the 2005 session, the legislature passed law making it public and restricting certain pieces of it. Mm-hmm.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with Paul Kraft with the consulting company Freeman Kraft McGregor Group. Paul helps governments across the country administer election procedures.
When it comes to Florida's public records law, mm-hmm. did we really even have a choice in rejecting the requests from the administration and the commission with regards to gathering this data?
Not at all. Basically, Chapter 119.10 provides penalties for withholding public records and willfully violating the provisions of our public records law. Those are first-degree misdemeanors, mm-hmm. which apply both to, you know, state officers, elected officials, and state employees.
So many are wondering, what's the basis of this? And some see it as questionable that when they're not seeing any instances of these millions of fraud, why are we even doing this? Why are we going down this road of trying to find something that's not really such a big problem? There's a problem, as you mentioned earlier, but not on this massive scale. What do you say to those people, or do you think this step is still necessary?
Well, I'm not going to get into the debate as to the commission's motives. I don't know. I haven't spoken with them. In fact, what I know of their request is basically what I've read in the media. All the media seems to agree that they've only requested information that is already publicly available. Should they be doing that? Are they going to achieve anything? Is it a good use of public funds? I don't know. I think we'll have to see, you know, what they find, what they do with it, you know, what they spend to do it.
When it comes to, lastly, as we wrap up, looking to maintaining the integrity of our voting systems around the country, what should we do? Should we return to, like, you know, making sure we have paper attached, or do you have concerns with the digital transition? How do we avoid a cyber attack or any other problems to our system as we go through this?
By sound system security procedures and policies, which many sectors of our society and our business community have not really addressed as well as they should have over the years, and a lot of people are getting caught up in that. I think, though, all the election officials that I deal with are very, very concerned about security, very careful to do everything they can to keep their system secure. And I think that's just an ongoing fight. As to paper versus electronic, paper is very difficult to back up. It's very difficult to make extra copies of large volumes of paper, and it's a very fragile material. It can easily be altered, so it has its own security problems. You know, electronic data, you can make multiple copies and store them in multiple places. You can make those copies very quickly. So I'm not one who believes that electronic data, you know, is more dangerous than paper.
So what should we do? A hybrid?
Basically, with any paper to electronic system, you hold on to the paper until you're sure that you have sufficient backups.
Oh.
And you know, you run daily scans on your systems, you look for cyber attacks, and you go forward.
Paul Kraft, thank you so much for joining me here on The Rotunda. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. Be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.